everyone. Welcome to This Is Row, a podcast dedicated to my fellow nomads out there. On this show, I'll be sitting down with my friends and chatting about how their life stories have prepared them for who they are today, how they are just figuring it out, connecting the dots, and what the roadblocks are on the way to their version of success. For a while now, I've been going back and forth about what I want to share more of on this podcast. And after a lot of overthinking and deliberating, I was fed up, so I decided to turn to LinkedIn. I thought, you know what? I need to go see who I know, these people that I used to go to school with or folks that I've met along the way, and hopefully that'll bring some new type of inspiration that I need. Sure enough, there was Peter. Peter Varberg, an old friend from high school. We met in our senior year in Manila, Philippines. He's a white, blonde, blue-eyed American who was born and raised in the Philippines and now resides in California. So I check him out. I see that he's a professional sales and leadership coach at an international sales performance coaching company called Southwestern Consulting, based in San Diego. Okay, but like, what are the odds though that he's in coaching? I just recently became a certified coach. Like, this must be a sign. Peter and I were really close, and I have nothing but amazing memories of our friendship. But through the years of traveling, relocating, we sort of lost touch, but somewhere I always knew that Peter's door would be open. I decided to reach out, even though I thought, man, this is so random. What if he thinks this is like the weirdest thing ever? But somewhere I knew, like, I just have to try. I invited him to be on my podcast with the intention to share more about life, the journey, and what we're learning along the way. Interestingly enough, every single time I say this to a potential new guest, the conversation shapes and leads itself in a way that is so specific to the individual I'm talking to. So before we jump on this podcast, I was like, we need to call first. On one hand, I thought, what if it's so weird that he and I might not be like connecting in the same way, or what if my podcast and my story isn't aligning with his brand right now? On the other end, I thought, if I don't record this, we might lose some magic, which I will admit we kind of did. So after this 2-hour conversation, we came to a mutual place where we decided that the best place to start is our experiences and our journey to being a third culture kid, growing up multiculturally, and how that has shaped us today as adults. Extremely pleased to have Peter on the show today. He has a beautiful worldview and a passion for others. And aside from just being an amazing coach, he's a talented cinematographer, filmmaker, and graphic designer. And whether on stage or behind a lens, he loves telling stories that impact other people. So you can see why I wanted to have him on the show. So let's just get into it. I wanted to ask you if you'd be willing to tell a short story about how you and I met.
How we met, Faith Academy in Manila, Philippines, private little school on a golf course in kind of Manila, but really, really far away from Metro Manila.
Yeah.
And, it was senior year. A lot of just context, the size of classes, 70 people, 73 people, I think was like our graduating class. So small. Yeah. And a lot of people had lived there and gone to that school for years. Mm-hmm. You know, some like since second, third grade. And then here comes Rochelle. Like, oh, hi. And then I think how we got close, we had some good mutual friends, and then AP Art. I was the teacher's aide.
Yes.
For part of AP Art. Yeah, and so yeah. I was not artistic. I was fulfilling some kind of credit. I don't even remember. But it was a fun elective to like be the, you know, AP Art aide. And so one of the funny things is I became like the model sometimes where like it's very exhausting to sit still.
Yeah.
You know, and going to a Christian school is like definitely not nude modeling, thankfully. But, you know, I had a whole lot more respect for people that model for art classes because you just like sit.
Yeah.
And you're, and then you look at these artist renditions of you. And although a lot of them are quite photorealistic, you know, that there's these unique ways that people see you. that it's really kind of strange to like look at drawings of yourself and like whether it's coloring pencil or, you know, charcoal, you guys did all the different things. And it's just like, well, there I am. And then you walk down the hall and it's like pictures of me. And I'm like, this is strange. But yes.
All these different art angles classes. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But like art classes, there's a lot of like downtime, social time, like drawing. So I think we got pretty close chit-chatting. I was a very distracting classmate to have.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But a fun one. A fun yes. one. It's so funny that you say that because I don't actually really remember that. It's Mr. French was our, it was like upstairs in the corner, I think, of home economics. So for context as well, this was a school for missionary children. I was not a missionary child, which then concluded it to be a business kid. And I was Catholic. I came from a very open international school to then faith. So then I'm just like, hey, how are you? Hi, everyone. And I do vividly remember how small it was. And the size of the school was exactly what I needed. Mm. I also remember Tina Wu very vividly. She was also like, hey, how are you? And Micah stood out, your cousin, because he was literally 6'8". I spent a little over a year at Faith. And the reason why I ended up wanting to talk to you is you're one of the people that I know that's part of the third culture kid community. And I found that when I say that to people, they have no idea what that means. So I was wondering, are you able to explain in short what third culture kid means?
The gist of it is being raised in a culture different than your quote unquote home culture. So obviously just looking at me, if this is a video podcast, I don't know, is this audio? Okay. Video. Yes. I kind of joke sometimes that I could be the poster child of white privilege with my facial feet, you know, like I'm just literally as white as, you know, you could come. Obviously that's a joke, but, I was born and raised in the Philippines to a father who was, raised in the Philippines. So literally he knows like four or five different local languages, and he's in the process of retranslating the Bible. And some people are like, you know this better than I do, because, you know, people there know it vocally and he knows it like grammatically and written. So like, that's my father, right? He is not quite American, but is very American, you know?
Oh yeah. I've seen your
father. Parents grew up and his parents raised him in the Philippines. And then my mother was raised in, at the time was Zaire, now part of the Congo, in Africa. So she was born there, raised there, would run around as a schoolgirl, like catching termites in her mouth, you know, like those types of Africa, you know, like what you would think, not the mud huts where people assume that. So obviously for me, do I have a home culture? America-ish, but the fact that I was raised as a white American in the Philippines makes me a third culture kid. Now there's a lot more of that, I believe, in the world, but it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure scientifically where they would put people that are immigrants to America, because that's obviously a third culture kid in a sense, but it's kind of different when you're choosing to assimilate into that society. So for
really
me,
good point.
Third culture kid, right? I lived there for my childhood. I would return home every 4 years to America. I came to America for graduate or for college. A lot of our classmates at Faith, they would go back to Australia or New Zealand or Korea. So it wasn't like we are moving to the Philippines to assimilate and become Filipino citizens. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big differentiator versus like an immigrant.
That's a good point. And I'm so grateful that you said that, because I have an American accent, which I learned from Faith, from all of you guys. Mm. That's like the biggest tongue twister for so many people, because they're just like, okay, but wait. So your mom's Filipino, your dad's Dutch. You're born in Holland, but at six, you went to Singapore for 10 years. Then I went to the Philippines for a year and then graduated and then went back to Holland. And then at 26, I moved to the States. They're just like, but your English is just so good. I love when people say that. I go, wow, thank you so much. So is yours, is always my answer. And then I'm like, yeah, but you know, so you're Dutch. And I go, well, I'm Dutch Filipino. And I'm like, you know, it's actually easier if I just tell you like I'm third culture. And then they're just like, I don't even know what that is. Now I'm an immigrant who I guess will be naturalized at some point, which is like the technicality. But I think if I could choose an identity, it would be third cultured. Mm. And when I had you on the phone the other day, I know I joked and said, you're like way more Filipino than I am. And I think that added like this whole other layer of like, how do we even go there? So I wrote down a couple of questions. Life as a third culture kid for the both of us, I think, was just life. It wasn't anything special. Like, that's how we grew up, right? So my question to you would be, you lived your whole life in the Philippines and you ended up going back to the States. What was that transition for you? Quote unquote, yes. Going back home, right? Your passport country.
Yes. So for me, the interesting piece of it is born in Tacloban, Philippines, which is in Leyte, more rural, biggest city in our area, but it's very much, it's not the city, you know, like there's lots of places in America where you might say you're from Houston, but you're not, because mm-hmm. that's the big city. Like Tacloban is not really that big of a city in standards worldwide. Okay. But, or 2 years old, I was in America. Second grade, I was in America. Sixth grade, I was in America. And 11th grade, I was in America. So every 4 years in the Philippines, we'd come back to America for a year.
Oh, a whole year.
My parents decided to do that because there's other sort of schedules where you might be in the States for 6 months. And they wanted us to have like an entire school year, right? Where we could actually get friends and be a part of the school. I found like very key. My memory is kind of interesting, I found, because there's such a drastic difference in those years that when people ask, how old were you when this happened? I'm pretty good at getting exactly when, because I have these like key benchmarks of like, oh, that was before this time I went to the States, which is kind of interesting and unique. But like, obviously 2 years old, who knows? You're just having fun playing games with your friends.
Yeah.
Second grade, similar, you know, like I don't necessarily feel like there was that big of a thing. Sixth grade, you throw in puberty, you threw in like I had gained some weight, you could like insecurity, shame, low self-image, like all of this lumped into like a town of 9,000 in Central California, and the one kid that's like wasn't born and raised there, and he's from the Philippines. Like that was a really rough year. And then you get to like 11th grade, I went back to the same town, some people still knew me. And 11th grade, high school, there's a lot more like integration, kids moving. I feel like it's a bit more normal. Mm-hmm. And so you asked about coming back after high school. Obviously, there was like that slow transition all the way through sixth grade. I was in like a local Filipino private school in Tacloban. So that's very like culturally language Filipino. Then Faith Academy was more culturally American, although it was very diverse. So that kind of helped prepare me. And especially going to the States for my junior year, like that really helped to get my sights set on college, kind of prepare for that transition. So I think a lot of those circumstances helped me mentally and emotionally prepare for college. And then when you come to college, a lot of students are from all over the place. So it's a lot more acceptable to like be different or not from there.
Yeah.
Going to a major university versus like my sixth grade year. Those would be the more difficult, like culture shock, like, oh my goodness, type years.
It's kind of crazy because we both know about being uprooted, but yours was very, what's the word?
Consistent.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing that I was also thinking through as you were talking, that I've shared stories with people that were like military kids or, you know, their parents moved a lot for business.
Yep.
And it's a very different experience for me. At the time, I was old enough to understand my parents' schedule, to just know that year I'm going to be in the States. Like, I knew way out in advance what the schedule was. It wasn't like, sorry, kids, pack up your bags.
That's it.
That is like a level of change and trauma that I know is something I never experienced. I try to have a lot of compassion for people that go through that. I know that uprooting is really hard, and my uprooting was hard, but it's very different from like the, I think a lot of kids, especially, you know, when you look at mental health, like the security, the consistency, you know, even like a abusive parent that's consistently a certain way is better than a parent that like, maybe like an alcoholic parent that like, I don't know what I'm going to get today when dad comes home. Like psychologically, that's more difficult for a child. And so for me, like the moving wasn't as much of this traumatic, like uprooted feel because it was scheduled, but it is kind of unique in that I understood that at an early age. I knew what to expect. There was still this element of pain and like resistance and like, I don't want to leave my friends. I'm just making, you know, like all those similar things, but it's not like, oh no, everything's changing forever. Or like if I just watched the movie Inside Out again, I don't know if you've seen Inside Out by Pixar, but like it's centered around a teenage girl moving from Minnesota to San Francisco. And a lot of those thoughts and feelings are like that kind of just trauma of like being ripped away from all that you ever knew.
I never thought about it that way. And it's so interesting that I'm like gaining perspective as you're answering them live. I didn't have that expectation of, okay, in 3 years we're moving. It was very, it's possible, because my dad ended up being able to get relocated because he worked for KLM. And they did prepare and said, you know, contracts, sometimes they are between 2 and 4 years. We can either send you elsewhere, we can extend. In our case, it was always extended, that it almost felt like it was forever. I guess like whatever forever means for a kid. So when I heard that we all of a sudden had to move, it was such a shocker. And you're just like, my whole life is being like ripped apart, and you know, it's going to be so difficult, and you don't know what you don't know. Specifically, I was a teenager when we moved from Singapore to the Philippines, but I was only 6. My parents sold it in a way of like, you hate wearing winter clothes. I said, yes. They're like, we're moving. You will never have to wear them again. I was like, cool, let's go. Right? Like, you're 6. Like, how much negotiation does your parents really have to do sometimes? And I guess what's coming to mind is you understood the element of uprooting, but also integrating comes with that. Being social, like trying to be open-minded, making friends, right? Because like that's kind of like your job, because otherwise, you know, that's a hard place to be. I guess like integrating and adapting to your environment. And I'm wondering if you could maybe share more insight on, now as like an adult, what are some of those things that you learned that you apply in like maybe your work or your day-to-day?
Yeah, because I think on a foundational level, we all just want to fit in. Essentially, like we want to be part of community.
Belong.
We want to socially belong into something. So even as a kid, like I wanted to dye my hair black. Like literally at the time, this is how young I was when I have these memories. It's like, I'm so bad at hide and seek. Everyone can find me. You know, like I wanted like, you know, play tag and like, you know, recess games where it's like, I actually kind of fit in, you know, which is kind of an interesting thought as a child. But I guess to answer your question, I've learned on a deeper level to relate with people. A lot of people are longing for that. And regardless of the kind of background or the differences, it's like, even if, you know, I live in San Diego, someone moved from LA down to San Diego. It's like, there's that same element that they are feeling, and I can relate. I'm not sure exactly where I learned it all, whether it was through like film courses or storytelling courses, but it's like people relate on emotions.
Yeah.
So for example, someone might have parents that were divorced or might have a death of someone in their family at an early age. Oh, I can't relate with them because my parents aren't divorced. But no, on a foundational level, there's loss, there's grief. I can relate to the grief and the loss. I can relate to a feeling of rejection or a feeling of failure. You know, like those type of foundational emotions, I think, is what really connects humans. And when we get all dialed into like the specifics, it's like, who else in the world really has a background like me? I don't know if I've really met someone quite with that background. Obviously, Faith Academy had a high percentage of missionary kids that have somewhat of a similar background. But even compared to a lot of our close friends from Faith, it's like my background was quite different.
Yeah.
So I think looking at like, we relate on a lot of the ways we talked about, even on the phone the other day, is like the third culture piece, uprootedness, you know, like all of those feelings of like, I'm different. Where is my home?
Yeah.
So I think what I apply and have learned from that upbringing is just when I meet people and they come up to me and they look at me like, what the heck? Or like you said, like, it's a tongue twister. And they're like, so what are you? Right? Like, I'm never in that position anymore, because no matter how unique or complex someone's background is, they're not an enigma. What is this person? It's like, oh, hey, you've had a different upbringing that doesn't fit in the box, or you're a third culture kid or something like that. Like, I feel like I can relate to those people and make them feel heard and understood.
Yeah.
In a way that people born and raised in one spot have a big difficulty doing, and they just kind of look at them like, change topic.
Right? Yes, right? Like, I don't know what to do about that.
Oh, well, that's great. How was it in the Philippines? What was that? You know, like these questions that for us, people that are third culture kids, we hear it all the time.
Yeah.
And you're almost getting annoyed. Like, can you ask a more interesting question than what was it like being in the Philippines?
Yeah.
Well, it's a tropical country. You want to talk about the weather? You want to
Yeah. Like, what are like, you looking for?
Yeah. And it's just, you know, again, it's not ignorance in a bad way. It's just they don't know what they don't know. So for their mind, they're, you can tell that they're like extraordinarily interested and like, that's so interesting and unique. And they just want to say, tell me more. And what comes out of their mouth is this like blah question that you're just like, I don't know what to do with that question.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said it that way, because I am married to someone who was like born and raised here, has friends that were born and raised here. Thankfully, he has broadened his friendship that now are more international, and he has like different groups of friends. But I always assumed, shame on me, that by giving you the context of I'm Dutch Filipino raised in Asia, that I'm giving you all the information that you need, that I'm multicultural, that I've lived in multiple places, and therefore the way I think or the way I see the world is probably different than you because I've experienced it differently. But I didn't realize that everyone in America is from somewhere else. So they're like, oh yeah, no, I am Irish. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, how long have you lived here? They're like, never. I'm like, oh, golly. Now I have to like find this whole different approach of like trying to introduce myself without, you know, getting into the sweats of like, where are you from? Right? Because it's like, I don't know. I'm from everywhere where I've lived. And I've tried to give you that context and kind of like to answer my own question that I asked to you of like, how does that uprooting transition? My favorite was the reintegration into your own culture. That was like the one I forgot earlier. It's not really reintegration if you kind of like left, but also kind of don't really consider it home, because just because you went to like one school doesn't mean that the next school is like the same or like the town or the people. What I've noticed is I can connect with like a broader range of people. And I see it in my friends, and I just see it in like, I could talk to, I had to get a driving instructor because I had to like get my license for the third time in a different third country. She was from Iran. Immigrant, lived here for years, but she was like, you're my favorite student. I'm so sad that you're leaving. Cause like, I just connected so easily with understanding that her family was in a different country, and she was on WhatsApp video call while she was teaching me how to drive, just like learning how to pass the exam, obviously. Cause once you know how to, you can drive in the Philippines, you can drive anywhere. Right.
Yes.
Yes.
It's hard to follow the rules, though.
What do you mean you don't honk to communicate? That's not a thing here.
Oh, stop sign means you stop? Okay.
I've noticed that, A, I think I have like a broader reach of different types of people.
Yeah.
That they're like older, younger, in between, the different sexes, different backgrounds, whether it's faith-related, non-faith-related, another faith-related. And I've also noticed that every time I had to get like a new job or went to a school, even though I'm like a social introvert, I have like the superpower to kind of like make everyone else feel comfortable, even though I'm the new person, which I think is a superpower because not a lot of people know how to put themselves up so vulnerably. It's like a tactic of I need to make connections now because it's going to be harder if we wait 2 weeks or a month. And I think this is how I don't know about you. I am a life coach. I think this was like my purpose all along to have people be able to say, I think this girl gets it, even though it's about transitioning to a different college or immigration, not like immigration wedding, but like marrying across borders or...
Yeah, cross-cultural
marriage. Cross-cultural marriage. Sorry, there you go. Starting a company. I have so many like different walks of life that are in my life and also through coaching that now talking to you, I'm realizing that's, I think, what my superpower has become as being a third culture kid, essentially.
Yeah. And I'm kind of curious, Ro, like for me, a couple things. One, okay. I get really excited when I meet internationals. So like in America, it's interesting because like you said, oh, I'm Irish or like, you know, it's like I meet a ton of Filipinos that are Americans, you know, like they're technically Americans. And I don't know where to really draw the line. But, you know, for 8 summers, I went door to door doing sales to pay my way through school. And so I met all kinds of people. And whenever I'd meet a family that's like legit international, you know, like, oh, we moved here from Kenya. And it's like the parents that immigrated. I was like, you know, and like, I like have, or like I whenever I get in an Uber and like my Uber driver is like some immigrant or something. And I'm like, lad, let's talk. Tell me, you know, what are the, and we're going at it. And it's like so fun sometimes. And it's no offense to Americans, but sometimes it's just like, oh, all you know is this. It's like, what do we talk about? Sports? Weather? You know, like...
Yes, politics.
But yeah, again, it's like, obviously I have plenty of friends that are American, but it's like, I've just noticed that as someone who is technically like international, even though I'm totally, I'm a spy, I guess.
Yeah, the way you look.
Based on my physical appearance.
Blue-eyed blonde hair. Yeah.
I was kind of curious if you kind of relate where it's like, it's exciting because you're like, ooh, I want to find out about where they're from and all this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. To your point with the Uber drivers, a lot of the drivers were like parents essentially that came to the States and then had their kids here. And a lot of those conversations were like, oh, you know, I just really wish that my kids were more culturally in tune with our culture, but they're so American. In the Philippines, it would be like, why you act so white? You know, why you're so poor-inder?
Poor-inder.
Yeah. And I would just tell them like the play-by-play, why that is, why that was challenging for their kids and why that is such a disconnect for them. For some reason, people just thought that I was like weirdly psychic, but it's not because I am your kid, but I'm also you as the parent. Because when I was born in Holland, there was very little Filipino culture because my Dutch grandparents were like, we're in Holland, we must be Dutch. So I think my mom was like praying to God, please let me go to Asia. And then all of a sudden her prayers were granted and she's like, yes, going back to Asia, right? And she was like, thank God, because otherwise my kids are just anopute. And even though we're the only brown kids in the Dutch school back then, we weren't like super integrated that way. But anyway, I do get excited because it is this weird sense of like
home
and comfort of like, this is the pain that I carry of not seeing my best friends or losing touch with someone because whatever, I lived here, you lived there, and we don't really get to see each other on the daily, of like, this is why I have these superpowers, to help other people, at least for me, like have a better understanding of really what's going on versus, oh, I just wish there were more Filipino, or I wish they were just more Indian, or that huge disconnect. And just like on a side story, I have an uncle and an aunt that live here in New York. Their first son was maybe like 6 years old when they came here. And the second son is our age, and he was born here in New York, in a town that had was just predominantly like white Jewish kids. So he never understood why he looked different. He just thought he was Jewish, just darker. And he is like the epitome of like an American, almost like a white guy stuck in an Asian body, kind of. And his parents to this day are super Filipino, like only eat rice, go to the churches, have Santo Niño, have the prayers, like to the T. And they're like, you know, it just makes us really sad that he's not very Filipino. And he's just like, I just don't really care. I guess to your question, yes, it does always excite me when I meet internationals, because it's like, God, this is thrilling. So tell me more. Like, how did you come here? And like, what do you think about raising your kids in another culture? Like, do you have questions? I have answers. Like, would love to have the discourse.
Yeah. With the superpower, it's like, if someone has had to lose a lot of weight in their life, then they have the skill and the understanding of what it takes to do that. Mm. If someone like us has had to reroute or uproot and assimilate into a variety of different cultures, then we have a skill set learned by necessity that we had to go through in our life. Regardless of how traumatic it might have been for us, we now have that ability to help others through that process. I think with what you were saying about the white Jewish Asian kid in New York, it's like I've seen these videos online too where people will make jokes about the bringing the lunchbox. A lot of like the Asian cultures will have like the mom made the lunchbox and they bring it to the school and they get made fun of and like, what's that smell? And I've noticed a lot of like Asian Americans online will have like these reels and videos about, you know, remember when you had to bring your lunchbox to school, how embarrassing that was.
Yeah.
And I think like that just is a very good illustration of what it's like to be a kid and a human, where it's like everyone else got food from here. My food is different. It smells different. It tastes different. I want to have that food. So again, like that friend of yours, it's like, no wonder he didn't really care about his culture, because the more he related with his culture, probably the more he was treated differently, the less he was understood and accepted. So I think it's natural to try and do everything. Like for me, wanting to dye my hair black when I was in the Philippines, it's like I was doing everything I could to try to be more like that. And one of the things that I think is interesting, and this is the kind of second question for you, is that I wouldn't call it a superpower. Sometimes it actually gets me in trouble. But I have this, like I start talking the accent of the person who's talking to me. And people that know me and don't know my background, and they're like sitting in an Uber with me. And now I start talking I enunciate way clearer. I use less complicated grammar and verbs. Like it's just like I speak like elementary kinder, you know, like very simple.
Yeah.
I use much more words to explain. And my friend will leave the car and they'll be like, that was kind of weird. Like, why did you talk to him so differently? And I was like, what? They're like, you don't talk like that. Like, that's kind of offensive. You're kind of using his accent. And I'm like, naturally kind of take that in and try to be more similar. And it's kind of funny for me because like even, you know, I start speaking these other accents and I know a bit of Spanish, sounding more and more like the person I'm talking to. And I've always been curious. I know my perspective. I'm like so curious about what did that person walk away from that conversation thinking? Like, who is this white guy? Started using my accent. But I do it in the States too. Like I'll use Southern accents and things like that. And depending on where I am, when I would sell books in Wisconsin, I started you know, ocean and grocery bag and, you know, like those things. Like I was trying to like get the accent.
Sure.
And, but yeah, it sounds like based on your reaction, that's something you do too.
Yeah. I laugh because, I laugh because I do the same and I have to consciously be like, don't do it. Don't do it. Just be cool. Therefore, some of the conversations then end short because I'm just obsessed with doing accents. On top of that, my husband, he always laughs. He's like, you and your accents. And like everyone always says, like, I think you were maybe, I think you're on the wrong career path. Like you should have been an actor. And I think I always say like, maybe I was an actor in my previous life or the acting part is still to come.
Or comedian.
Or, well, yes.
You look at like Trevor Noah, Joel Coy, like those guys, like Trevor Noah, he just like does a whole illustration from all these different points of view with different accents and, you know, and he does it so well. And you're like, I feel like I'm watching three people in this dialogue.
Yes.
And it's just him.
And I feel like with the Joel Coy, when it came out with his mom, like looking for his keys, my mom actually ended up showing me this side note. And she was like, "Hi, Anak, is this funny? And I said to her, I was like, Mom, that's literally him describing you. Were you ever helpful looking for something? She's like, "Oi, I know, not my problem that you misplaced your keys." And I said, but we live in this house and we have like a strategy. She's like, no, I will watch you look for your keys. That's what I will do. And I have to say, I think, A, those type of comedians, like adding their accents and being like able to code switch, but also just like put on the accent so fluently and like get rid of it so fluently. I always worried that people would take that as like an offense. As if I was like trying to mock you.
Yes. That's why like people would be like, Peter, what are you doing?
Because that's rude.
You're mocking him. That's rude.
And so now it's just me practicing accents for a future gig, whether it's in acting or playing a Pixar character with an accent.
Reading an audiobook that you write.
Yeah, or that. Especially one that has my mom in it. Because my mom doesn't have a Filipino accent.
Oh, that's funny.
But I want to say thank you for admitting to that as well, because I just thought that it was like one of those things that I just do that's really weird. And now I realize that it kind of maybe comes with the territory. I'm adapting to you. Like I'm being the chameleon in this scenario, just so like to make you feel comfortable and to not make it weird or to have you have questions about me or why I sound different or, you know, I just want to like fit in, done.
I think it's because like if I just spoke straight American English as an American in the Philippines, I wouldn't even be able to say the words and people wouldn't really understand some of the things I'm saying. Like whenever I see some of these Americans that go over to the Philippines and you're like, yo, just say it normal. Stop. What is that? We had to learn to fit in there to like have this accent, you know? So we spent our life like, okay, I'm with my parents. I talk American.
Sure.
I'm with my friends. I'm speaking in that Phil-Am, you know, little Daglish accent, you know?
Yeah.
And then what's funny is when people try to guess your accent, I've had this happen more now as an adult. They're like, hey, Peter, like, where's that from? Is that like a Southern accent? And I'm like, Southern? Where? I was like, I was born and raised in the Philippines. They're like all thrown off. But like, what was funny was like when I did my, my sales job, I remember I'd spent 2 summers in North Carolina, more Southern accent people. And then the next year I went to Wisconsin. And everyone thought I was Southern because I had spent 2 years saying those words of my sales talk to Southern people.
Of course.
Like adapting that accent. So then when I did that muscle memory of like doing my sales talk and my whole presentation, people were just like, oh, you're Southern. And I'm like, no.
Yes.
But then even as an adult, like years later, people have pegged me as like, you have an accent. Where are you from? You're never going to guess the
literally,
truth.
Literally, never. You know what's coming up for me as you're saying this? So like a random like reference, like story is I have a waxing lady who is a Brazilian immigrant. Okay. She was like, oh, wow, you've like moved to all these places and you're an immigrant. So like you get it. And I always feel so bad. bad saying that because like I'm pretty privileged in my immigration story. Like I have a husband, he works, he had health insurance, like really good immigration story. I have very comfortable. Anyway, she was like, well, how do you like do that to like move to all these places? And as she asked me that, I made the personal connection of this is why I have so many nicknames. Because like one nickname is like Roche is very Dutch, or like Rochelle is very American. And then it became Rose. So I have all these different versions of myself from all these different places that I've realized with this whole taking on accents, or like in New York, the way you say coffee, what are you doing? Like how they talk. I realize it's because like I'm putting on this persona, which is a version of who I am. It's just adapted to my surroundings. So when I'm in the Philippines, I will always be the white Filipino because I'm half, but there are different mannerisms that I have in the Philippines. There's different ways, you know, doing like manopo or greeting your, like I'm the white kid that does that. Essentially what I'm saying is it's like a version of myself that I created the persona with the word Ro or Rosh. And then this is how I act in this society, in this culture, in this country. And she looked at me and she was like, never thought about it that way, but that's actually very helpful. As long as you don't lose yourself, go have fun with it because you can be whoever you need to be.
Yeah.
Please share your story.
What was funny was I brought my Texan white girlfriend to the Philippines for Christmas, for Pascual.
Okay.
Like 2022 Christmas. What was really funny is there were things that I did that she had never seen me do before.
Tell me more.
Just happened because I was in the Philippines. So one of the things is that Filipinos don't say like, oh, come again, or what did you say, or can you repeat yourself? They say, ha, ha, ha. All of a sudden, she goes from a boyfriend who says, oh, what? I didn't hear you, to like, ha.
To her?
Yeah, I landed in the Philippines, and anytime I didn't hear anyone, what they said, I just go, ah, she got the biggest kick out of that because she's like, who are you?
Who
like,
are
what
you?
Is that? Like, use your words. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't even consciously think that I was making the, ah. And it's like this, but it's just like, that's how you communicate that you didn't hear what someone said. You just go, ah. It took me a while to actually like, when we traveled back to the States, it's like, I was still doing it for a bit. And that's something I never realized because she was someone from, you know, when I traveled back to the Philippines with my siblings, we just kind of like shift and we can't tell. But it's like, that was the first time I'd taken someone from like one of my communities or environments in America and brought them there. And they could see the way that I personally changed. That was like really obvious.
Mine is a Toberder.
Yeah.
Der. He goes, bro, where? I go, I'm pointing. And he goes, with what? I go, my lips, bro. It's there. Or I would go, Peter. And he goes, don't. I go, Peter, don't talk to me like that. Now, I mean, we've been married 5 years, but he's noticed the little mannerisms, but he's never been fortunate enough to be able to go home to anywhere else with me. So I wish I would have been a fly on the wall with your girlfriend experiencing you completely shifting into Filipino Peter.
It also happens when I'm with
Filipino
if I
people.
Go to a friend's party and it's like all the titas, they're chismes. and all of a sudden they like, oh, you speak Tagalog. And we start So like, this is actually a funny thing. Side note about the Philippines that I love. If you go to like France and you try to speak French, it's like, you're probably getting it wrong.
Mm.
You know, if you go to Mexico and you try to speak Spanish, they're like, ¿Dónde está? And they're like, muy bien, muy bien. And they're like so encouraging, right?
Yeah.
But the Philippines is like another level. It's like you speak Tagalog and they're like, hoy, Sigi, come here. He speaks Tagalog. Hoy, Lola. Lolo, he speaks Tagalog. It's like, let's get everyone together.
Audience, sige.
Oy. You get into the center of the barangay at the basketball court and they get the microphone out. Okay. You share your name. You speak Tagalog, huh? Sige.
Can we go request for song? Can you sing?
Karaoke.
Wait, request. Yeah, it's like now you're the show.
Oh yeah. Like, we would do basketball trips, and I don't know if you knew this, but like our, we would have like sports teams and we'd go down to Davao, and like literally mm-hmm. they would create a parade. We would all sit, the like white American, like high school basketball team, on top of a jeepney. And we would do a whole round through the entire town. And then we would end and finish in the center at the basketball court for a basketball game against the local team. I just remember being in like eighth grade or ninth grade. And it's like, what is this? You know, like I literally am some kind of superstar being paraded around the city. And I'm just some average skill level basketball player. But I'm huge compared to the Filipinos. And then we had like Micah and Ben Spicer, these other guys, and they would be like, the Two Towers. And they'd like come up with all these nicknames for us as we played. It was like one of my favorite basketball trips. But
didn't Micah go pro in the Philippines?
No. Oh, Mariah. Mariah Gingerich. Gingrich in English, but in the Philippines, Mariah Gingerich. Yeah, the other fun thing is that, you know, like they can't say peas very well. So Peter is Peter. And Philip, my brother's name, is my favorite. Belief. It's like the PH became the P. Belief. So Peter and Belief, and it's a barber. It's barber.
I'm done. I can't do it.
I love Peter Pan. Peter Pan.
No.
You know, Peter Pan.
If I close my eyes and I heard you speak, you do sound like a Filipino kid.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you just have the funny thing, I think, that is unique as a white American male is yes. I don't think any normal white American males know what it feels like to be catcalled. But oh man,
not really.
It's
no.
a different kind of cat call. It's not the same as like being a woman in New York. I imagine walking down the street, you're across the block. You know, this place going down the street on a jeepney, and it's like stopped in traffic. Hey, Joe, hey Joe, Joe Mano. G.I. Joe was one of the first American cartoons, so they call Americans Joe. So especially out in rural, hey Joe. And you're like, well, they're summoning me. Or my favorite is like every barber haircut I've ever gotten is like they make some joke about selling my hair because it's gold. Or like you have like the I went back as and worked at my parents' school as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And there was this little girl that goes, grabs my arm. Are you a bear? Sweet little kindergartner.
Oh.
What? Because Filipinos don't have body hair. Natural Filipinos. Yep. Yep. And this type of body hair is very unique.
Wait, what's over that there. Like, bear?
Very exciting.
I like that.
Or my sister. Oi, Barbie doll. Whoa. They come over and just start assaulting her hair. And I'm just, it's not really sexual assault when it's your hair, but it's like my poor little sister walking around, people grabbing her hair. Like,
yeah. Ooh. Because for context, super blonde, it's like that white blonde almost.
Yeah.
Very blonde, very beautiful.
And both my parents are white. That's the question I get quite often. If you could imagine. Oh. Because there's so many white American men move to the Philippines, marry Filipinos.
Yes.
So people go, oh, Philippines, is your mom Filipina? Come on, man. Like, really? Like, you know enough about the Punnett squared, biology, genes. Like, it does not work that way.
How does that
work? You know, like.
I guess I have the opposite where they're like, oh, I bet your dad's like a lot older than your mom. I was like, no, she was not a sex worker, if that's what you're implying. And she's 4 years older than my dad. Like, relax, sir. When I moved back to the town, and I always laugh because like, I will beat you to your puns, to your jokes. Like, I will beat you to them because I've heard them all before. And I guess with my dad, in my dad's town, I kind of like dropped in out of nowhere. And I remember when they were like, wait, so Vic is your dad. I go, yeah. but he's white. So like, how did you get so tan?
Was that here in America?
No. I mean, it was in Holland. Oh. I mean, it's just as ignorant,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes like I try to make excuses for people. I don't know. My mom's brown. Just because like clearly there's this huge disconnect of like how it's impossible apparently for my dad to be white and for me to be brown. They're like, oh, wow. I just thought you were adopted.
But yeah, that's also the difference between going to a very homogenous, like one type of people culture.
Yeah.
So like for me too, like sometimes it's hard being in cities in America. This is kind of a strange thing about me. And I'm not saying it in like a negative way, but it's like I'm in a group, a society or a city in America that it, like everyone looks like me. I'm like, I need to move.
Yeah.
Right. Like I live in San Diego, Southern California. You live in New York, obviously very diverse areas. And I think part of the reason I live and have always wanted to live in big cities and very diverse big cities is because I feel almost out of place when I live in a culture that looks exactly like me.
Yeah. I have a closing question for you. It would either be advice to someone else who's a parent with children thinking about going abroad, or for you as like your younger self with all of this life experience of being third cultured and multi-rooted and going to all these different cultures and countries. What is like a piece of advice or insight you would want to share?
So to someone that is untraveled or someone who's thinking about traveling or thinking about going somewhere else.
Yes.
I would say like people are people. And one thing that's fun, especially with children, like when I've been to Haiti and I just play soccer with kids there. I remember last time I was there for a friend's wedding and 30 minutes of an hour of me just grabbing kids by the arm and pulling them up these steps. And they felt like they were on a catapult, you know, because it was just like, whoosh, and I'd throw them up in the air and they'd land. And it's like there's ways to connect with humans that don't require language. And when I went to Jamaica and like worked in a deaf community,
which
is amazing. I never really had a grasp for that. And leaving there with these friends, I don't sign very well. I learned some very basic signs that I've now forgotten. It's like I connected on like a, it's hard to explain, but a deeper like human level that wasn't language based. We don't know how to even speak each other's language, but after just a few days there, it's like I felt connected to this person. Or when I went to South Africa and it was like I made the best friend with this guy, Vuyo, who used to be one of the most wanted criminals in the area before he met Jesus. But, you know, I remember like we were sitting, like I was doing a documentary at the time and there for a missions trip, but we're sitting in this church service that's all in Xhosa, which is, it's supposed to have a, I'm not really good at the click, Xhosa.
Yes.
But like the language that they actually speak in Black Panther to like have the clicks and stuff, but it's all in that language. I don't know what the guy's saying. And then Vuyo leans over to me and he's like, hey, one of the main gang leaders lives down the street. You want to go see if he's home and get an interview? Because that's what we're trying to like do this documentary. I was like, okay, I trust you. Get in his car. We drive to this house and like he's honking. And I'm like just outside this house. I was like, I trust you, man. You know, and it's just like I felt like I was on a little adventure with my buddy Vuyo. Completely different backgrounds. You know, this guy grew up in a township, you know, an informal settlement, got into gangs. He was in prison for Grand Theft Auto, right? Like stealing stuff. And while we're driving, he's like, oh, here's how you like, I used to like take out the armored cars. He was like the driver. And I'm just sitting in this car with him and we're having a good old time. And we became great friends. You know, there's this deeper element of connection that's possible without words. But like, if you're traveling across the world, like don't freak out about like what language or how do I speak? Literally, you could get like dropped into the middle of some country in Asia, knowing none of the language. And the way that we are designed as humans, you would learn that language. You wouldn't need anyone that knew English. You would be able to learn that language. And that's kind of this wild reality that I don't think we realize that we have ability to connect with other human beings that surpasses cultural and language bounds. Mm. And most of the time we're so obsessed about what is different and what I don't know that we don't stop long enough to understand and just ask the questions of like, how do I understand who this person is or their language? And we have the ability much greater than we even comprehend.
That's really beautifully said. And I would add, pass the discomfort of yourself. And once you get over the fact that this is uncomfortable, it's so much easier to access that connection with someone who doesn't speak the same language or isn't from the same culture. I think from personal experience, I found people being held back by letting their personal discomfort take control. Well, this is not how we do it in Holland, or this is not how we do it in America. It's like, well, obviously, we're not there. Well, where do we have common ground? We all eat, we all drink, we all sleep. Where can we connect if it's not language, right?
Genuine curiosity, right?
There you go.
I think genuine curiosity is what it takes, because I remember it. I don't know if you were there when we did this at Faith, but they had this like Korean day, and all the Koreans would like, we would have a room on campus and they would bring like their traditional outfits. They would make kimbap. They would have the like seesaw thing where people were jumping on it. And it was just like, you would go down there to learn about traditional Korean culture. And it was almost like you show up and you're like, oh my goodness, you're like at a museum and you're like, I want to learn.
Yeah.
Make me this food. Like, I want to put on this outfit and take a picture. Like, that's just genuine curiosity of like, I want to understand how this works.
Yeah.
And if we treat other humans from other cultures that way, and we just have a genuine curiosity to understand and not make assumptions, it's a whole lot simpler than we make it.
Thank you so much for tuning in and contributing to a space where we share stories and perspectives. If you like what you hear, please hit that follow button, and your rating and reviews can help get this podcast out there to more listeners. If you'd like to follow along, you can find me at This Is RO Podcast on Instagram, and be sure to check back every Wednesday for new episodes. Much love. Until next time, this is Ro.